Okay, we're holding on Kofdalad on the base. Now it's about 10 lines from the top, the line against Tsubasa. We talked about, the Mishnah had mentioned a machlokas with Meir and the Chachamim, if there's a deadline for how long a woman has, an almana has to collect her ksuba. We said that there it's a given, there's some kind of deadline of 25 years, but we said there was a machlokas, what circumstances is that? Rav Meir had said it's if she's living with the Yisoyimim in the same house, because eventually she uses up stuff giving to her neighbors, whereas the Chachamim said no, it's if she's living in her father's house, because if she's living with the Yisoyimim, she may be embarrassed of them to be Tevei. So, Ki Asr of Dimi, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, to Babel, Omar Rav Shimon ben Pazi, Omar Rav Shimon ben Levi, Mishrom ba Kapara, Loishonu ala Mona Masayim. This machloikus in the Mishnah is only about the 100 or 200, whether she forfeits that after 25 years or whatever. Aval Tosfos Yeshla, but the Tosfos Ksuba, the extra amount that was written in the Ksuba, that she would get regardless. Whereas Rav Abba, who says in the name of Rav Yechanan, that no, it wouldn't just be the Ikur Ksuba, it would also be the Tosfos Ksuba. Why do Amar Rav Ivu, Amar Rav Yane, Tznoi Ksuba, Ksuba Dami? Because the Tznoim of the Ksuba, which includes the fact that he wrote into the thing over there that I'm agreeing to give you extra, Tzvi Chosin Dinan V'Hoisif, as we write in our Ksubas, those are considered like the Ksuba itself. If the Ksuba itself is forfeit after 25 years, under the different circumstances, according to a mayor or the Chachamim, so is the Tosfos. And in fact, Tosfos points out on Amud Aleph, that's when the Gemara had asked the assumption, and yet when the Gemara had started with the question that why is it that both for a poor woman or a rich woman, the deadline should be 25 years, according to a mayor, that was based on our Gemara over here. If we're saying that she loses the Iker as well as the Tosfos, then it makes sense to ask the question. Marta Bas Isis has a much bigger Tosfos than a poor woman who has nothing. But the answer again was Lafum Gam L'Shichna, that the richer she is, the more of a ksuba she has, the more she's giving away to her neighbors. The Rif, by the way, has a different girsa. His girsa is that Fakir. So you have one opinion that says that she lost the Mona Masayim but gets the Tosfos, and the other that no, she that the other opinion is that no, she hasn't lost the that she may have lost the Mona Masayim, but she does get the Tosfos. So the Rif's girsa is actually the other way. It's actually the other way around. And the Ran talks about it. Seems to be hard to understand that according to our Gemara. Anyway. Itmar Nami, they said also that there was a similar machlokas in Bavel. Amar Rav Abba, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, Loshonu El Amon Masayim, not a machlokas, but a similar statement was said in Bavel. Loshonu El Amon, Rav says, Loshonu El Amon Masayim, the machlokas in the Mishnah is only about the 100 or the 200. Abel Tosfos Yeshla, but the Tosfos she does get. Now, so Rav Abba is saying that, in the name of Rav Huna, but actually, and who said that this is what Rav said. But actually, Omer Rav Abba Rav Huna, Rav Abba asked Rav Huna, actually, Omer Rav Hachi, did Rav really say that? I know I'm saying over in your name that Rav said this, but did he actually say this?
How can he say it?
Well, you're telling me that Rav said this, but I'm curious. Did Rav really say this? Especially because, I mean, it kind of contradicts what we said before about that Rav, we said before that Rav's reasoning For why we talked about on Amud Aleph the difference of whether she has the shtar or she doesn't have the shtar. What would that, if she's going to be collecting the Tosfos, she needs the shtar necessarily for that reason anyway.
That's
the point. We were saying that if she has the shtar that she can collect, because otherwise if she had been moichel the ksuba, she would have given away the shtar. But why? She may have been moichel the ikur ksuba. She still wants the Tosfos ksuba, and therefore she's holding on to the shtar in order to keep that. So Rav Huna asked back to Rav Abba, let me understand what you're asking. Ishtikan ta'amrit or ashkiyam ta'amrit? Are you telling me, did Rav really say this? Like, I don't believe Rav said this. Like, you shouldn't be, like, ishtikan meloshin shtika. You shouldn't be saying this. You should be quiet and not be saying that Rav said this, because I don't believe he did. Or ashkiyam ta'amrit? Or, on the contrary, are you saying, you're saying that Rav said this? I'm really pleased to hear that. I agree. I definitely Rav said this. Let me get you a drink. Like you congratulate somebody. You said the right thing. Here, have a l'chaim. Mashkia. Amale ishtikam kam. And he says, no, what I'm, what, Rabbi Abba says to Rabbi Huna, what I meant was ishtikon. What I meant is that you should be silent. That I don't believe that Rav really said this. That's the girsa we have. But the Rimigash has a different girsa in one of his trovas, where he says that Rabbi Abba is asking Rabbi Huna, did Rav really say this? So Rabbi Huna is asking him, what did Rav specifically say when you asked him this question? Did he actually say this din? Was it ishtik? Was he quiet about it? He actually said he didn't say this din because he wasn't sure. Or ashkion, like he sort of evaded it by saying instead, you know, give me a drink. And he says ishtik on kamina, that he was silent when I asked him about it. So then, according to that girsa, I guess the idea would be that originally Rav said this, but later on, when Rav Huna asked him about it, then he didn't say that. He changed his mind, I guess. Yeah. Okay. The Gemara tells a case. Chamse de Rav Chiya Aricha, the mother-in-law of Rav Chiya Aricha. Aricha means the tall, so the pashtus just means he was a very tall person. Intasachua Havoi, she was also, besides being his own mother-in-law, she was the wife of his brother. So the two brothers, Rav Chiya and his brother, had married a mother and daughter, which is allowed off the halacha. We learned of such cases in Yevamos. So this woman is his mother-in-law as well as two brothers. One of them married the mother, and the other married not their own mother, obviously. No. Married a mother and daughter pair. One of them is married to the mother. One of them is married to the daughter. Two brothers, yeah. So Rav Chiya's brother is married to the mother. Rav Chiya himself is married to the daughter. So now this woman, so this woman is Rav Chiya Aricha's mother-in-law as well as sister-in-law. And she was an almana living in her father's house because Rav Chiya's brother had passed away.
Can you go the other way around? Also, a father and a son marrying two sisters.
Off the top of my head, I guess so. I can't think of a reason offhand why not, but I don't know. These family trees are a little complicated to think about. Let's look at it. Okay. So Amona Bevesa V'Yavoi, she was an Amona living in her father's house after her husband died. V'zom Esther Mechama Shinin B'Vei Nasha, and he gave her Mizonis for 25 years in her father's house, which is as he's supposed to do. L'soif Amra L'Havli Mizoni, afterwards 25 years are up, she says, let me continue having Mizonis. Amla L'Eslach Mizoni, she says, you don't get any Mizonis anymore. Havli K'suba, okay, so then give me my K'suba. Amla L'Loi Mizoni Islach V'Loi K'suba Islach. At this point, you don't get Mizonis and you don't get a ksuba. After 25 years, we learned the halacha is like a chachamim, that if she's living in Bein Nasha, in her father's house, after 25 years, she's moichal anu ksuba, then automatically all the tnoi ksuba go with it. One of the tnoi ksuba is she gets supported from the nechassim. All that's gone. Yeah. So it's closed, yeah. Tavati l'dinah kameh di Rav Bashila, so she took him to Beis Din in front of Rav Bashila. Amalei, so Rav Bashila tells him, Amalei Izzy, tell me Izzy. We've learned before, Izzy has two different possible meanings. It can either mean, like you'd say in English, so tell me, the Izzy would be like the so, or it means my friend. Whatever it is, so tell me, Gufa de Ovida Hechehava. Tell me what's the backstory over here of this Din Torah. Amalei, he tells him, Zanisa Esther Mechama Shinin Bevei Nasha. No, yeah, tell me, I need to know the facts, yeah, I need to know the backstory over here, yeah. You're telling her she doesn't get her ksuba and she doesn't get her mizonis. What's going on over here? Amalei, Zanis Esther Mechama Shin Bevei Nasha, Esther Mechama Shin Bevei Nasha. I've been giving her support for 25 years while she's living in her father's house, and you should know, B'chaya Demar, I swear by the Rebbe's life, D'Bekatzfoy, I'm sorry, Lord, that I personally brought the food to her on my shoulder. I gave her a lot of cover. She's my mother-in-law, after all. So I brought her food all this time. Well then, Amalei, so Rav Bashila tells him, wait a minute, that actually weakens your case. Time of my Amar Rabbanon calls Man Shiva Beis Baila Govik Sabasala Olam. What's the logic why the Rabbanon say that as long as she's living in the husband's house with the Yoshim, she can collect her ksuba forever, there's no time limit? Damrin Mishum Kisufa Hudalei Tava, because we say, why hasn't she demanded the ksuba all this time? Because she's embarrassed. She's having hanah from them, she's living with them in the same house, etc. Well, Hachnami, Mishum Kisufa Hudalei Tava. Well, new, here you're bringing her food every day, you're giving her covered, so it's the equivalent of her living with you in the house. Yes, physically she's living elsewhere, but that's the point. It's still, she can feel embarrassed that you're schlepping over my food to me every day. I'm embarrassed to come and sue you in Beis Din for the ksuba. No, zil havla. So go give it to her. Loy ashkach, but give her the ksuba. The pashas the ksuba. loyashkach. So Rav Chiya Aricha didn't pay attention to that. He felt that it's a wrong psakdin. Because of Ladrachta Anichse. So Rabbi Bashila wrote out an Adrachta on his property. An Adrachta, we've learned about before, is an official document from Beis Din that says that a Baal Chayv now has the right to go look for Nechasim that belong to this person who owes the money and go seize them and have them evaluated by Beis Din and sold to pay off the debt. So here that would be the thing. Also, I mean that is the normal situation when a debtor doesn't want to pay, and in this case he's a debtor for the ksuba according to Rabbi Bashila's psak, then if he doesn't want to pay up, then you have to seize property from him. So the adrachta is a document that gives the Baal Chayv the right to do that. Rashi and Bava Masir. She went. They went to Beis Din, yeah. And Rabbi Bashila passed him that she's entitled. So, but Rabbi Chiya Aricha was not listening to it, because he felt that the din had been paskin wrongly. So therefore, they had to write an adrachta. Rashi in Bava Metzia, by the way, explains the meaning of the word adrachta. It comes from the pasuk minucha hirdifu. It means like chase after somebody. So what's the lashon over there? Minucha hidrichu. That's the lashon. So an adrachta is like you're entitled to chase down property that belongs to this person and seize it. Yeah. Okay. Also, listen. Yeah, okay, we said she brought him to Beis Din, right. I mean, we didn't go through all the details of the Din Torah. The point was that when he explained what's going on, then Rabbi Bashila explained to him, based on what you just explained, that you've been bringing her food all these years, that strengthens her claim and weakens yours. Also, the Kameh de Rava. So he came and said to Rava to appeal the Din Torah.
Can you go and see two Rabbani?
Well, and he felt the Psak Din was wrong. He wanted to argue against the basis of the Psak. So there is a concept in halacha called mehechan dantuni, that if you want, that when a psak is given in Beis Din, you're entitled to tell the Beis Din, I want you to show me like the particular din in Shulchan Aruch or whatever that you're basing yourself on. But in this case, obviously, I mean, Rabbi Bashila had his svara. He said the svara that as long as, you know, since you're bringing her the food, it's the same thing. Rabbi Aricha didn't accept that svara. Mehechan dantuni, you don't have an explicit halo. I have an explicit Mishnah that says I'm potter after 25 years. You want to say it's svara, this, that, if she's living here, she's living there, you bring her food, you're not bringing her food, svara, very nice. But mehechan dantuni, what's the block with her halacha? Yeah.
1 second.
They weren't being tevei him as a rov, they're being tevei him as a private person. He's this woman's brother-in-law and son-in-law, and has been responsible for supporting her out of his brother's estate all these years that he yashined. He happens to be a Talmud Chacham, but the thing would have the first part of the story would have happened the same way if he had been an Amoraim. The second part, where he goes to Rava to appeal the Nidra, that he needs to be a Talmud Chacham to know what he's talking about. The Tosfos, by the way, discusses the Girsa. Are we talking about over here Rava or Rabba? It really depends on, since we mentioned here that they wrote down an Adrachta, the Gemara in Bava Metzia mentions three different opinions. The next part that we're going to be talking about is Peiris. So the Gemara in Bava Metzia in Hamaskid talks about the question, if an Adrachta is written out that a Baal Chayv has the right to collect property from the Loiva, at what point in the process, is he entitled to the payrus of that property? So you have three different opinions over there, Rava, Abaya, and Rava. So depending on how we learn our Gemara over here, could be the difference of whether it makes more sense to say that the next phase of the Din Torah went to Rava or to Rava. As we'll go through, we'll see. So often like I made the Rava, Omalay Khazi Mar Hechidonan, the Rebbe, look at how he donned me. I have a Mishnah on my side and he's coming as a svara to Omalay Shapir Donna. Rava tells him he did right. Yeah. Omalay, so now the Almona speaks up, she says, Ihachi, well if so, if now I have the right to collect the ksuba, well and that means the Adrachta was correct. Ihachi, Laza Lahadrali Peri Dimin Hahuyoimadhina. Then in that case, Rav Chiya Aricha should have to give me back all the peris that he's been using from that property, not from that day that my husband died, but from that day of when the Adrachta was written. Because
from the day
because Again, the three different opinions that you have there in Bava Metzia are as follows. You have Rabba says that Rabba says that that once the Adrachta is written, then right from then on the Baal Chayiv is entitled to the Peiros. Abaya says it's once it reaches him, once he receives it from Beis Din, which may not be the same day that it was written necessarily. And Rava says there once the Achrazta is finished, we've learned before that after property is seized by Beis Din, they have to go through a whole public auction to get a fair price for it. So that's Rava's opinion when you can start eating Peiros. That's the thing. If we say over here that she's demanding Peiros from when the Adrachta is written, that fits with Rava's opinion, not Rava's. So therefore, it makes more sense to say that this part of the Din Torah was in front of Rava. Otherwise, if it's in front of Rava, then Rava should tell her, what, you're not entitled, according to my opinion, you're not entitled to Peiros until after the Achrazta. Okay, Amalah, so he tells her, fine, Achvi the Adrachta, fine, show me the Adrachta, let me check the date on it, and we'll go according to that. Now he noticed that this Adrachta did not have written in it the words, we recognize that these nechasim that are mentioned in the Adrachta belong to the mess. When you think about it like this, Reb Chiya Aricha is not, when we say that the shibud that has on property that has to be given to the almana to pay for uksuba, obviously it doesn't apply to property that belonged to Reb Chiya himself all this time. Or at least that would be the assumption. We're gonna check that in a minute. But Pashtus, we would think it should only apply to the property that he yarshin from his brother, from her husband. This Adrachta did not say that detail, which theoretically meant that she could have taken any property, whether it belonged to Reb Chiya originally or whether it belonged to his brother originally. So he says that's a problem. On the law, Adrachta lab shapik siva. So Rava or Rava tells her, you know what, this Adrachta, there's a mistake in it. It's supposed to say that it applies only to the nechassim that belong to your original husband.
It would just say that
she found such and such nechassim. Well, yeah, it would have to say the basic idea of it is the shtar would say something like that this almana is entitled to go and look for property. Is entitled to go look among the properties which we found originally belonged to her husband, to her late husband, and she can go and collect from them and then use it to pay her ksuba. So, but I would have to say that.
The
Rabbi Barshila is based in the original Dayan from the first part of the case had written the Adrachta. Amrulay, so she says, okay, fine, Tezel Adrachta, fine, forget about the Adrachta. I won't demand Peiros from when the Adrachta is written. At least Eshkom Yomer the Shlimi Yomer Achrazda Adhashta. At least though I should be entitled to Peiros from the property from when the public auction was done until now, which is Rabbi's Shitta. So even, fine, I can't go according to Rabba's Shitta because the Adrachta was no good, but at least eventually the estate sale was done and the property was sold and I'm supposed to be collecting that money from Aksuba, I should be entitled to be reimbursed for the payers that he ate during that time. Amalah, so Rabba tells her, that's different. Hani mili hechad lekosiv to'osab Adrachta. That would be true if there was no mistake in the Adrachta. But if there's a mistake in the Adrachta, left one bother, and that doesn't apply. You can't say that you go from the Achrazta. You may be entitled to the property, which was now sold to collect the Uksuba, fine, there's no question about that, but you can't be entitled to the Peiros because of that mistake. So she says, wait, what's the problem with this mistake? Isn't it you, Rava, who say, and this would be the proof that it's Rava, that it's Rava who's the Tayan over here, not Rava. Or isn't it you, Rava, who says that the din is achrayus tovus sofer, who that even if achrayus is not written in a shtar, we still consider it just tovus sofer. It's like the sofer accidentally left it out, but achrayus still is in effect. Same thing over here. Okay, there's a mistake. They left out this vish medina, but it's still part of the standard thing. It should be considered as if it's there. You know how when it talks about in a number of places in Chassidus, the idea like how is it you find that even Poshita people are able to come up with the most complicated tainus and based in, because when you have a rotten for something, then this would be an illustration of it. Amalah Rava. So Rava tells her, you know what? Hold Lekalameh, but Torah Sofer. Well, actually, in this case, you can't say it's Torah Sofer. Why? You could say achrayus to a sofer because everybody knows there's supposed to be achrayus in a shtar. If the sofer didn't write it, then yes, you could assume he left it out by accident, but it's still supposed to be in effect.
But not
debaha, because you see over here in this case, afilu rabba bashila toy meikara. It's rabba bashila, the original dayan, is the one who made the mistake. It's not just, it's not something blatantly obvious that should have been in there. It's actually, it's a subtle detail that you have to realize that this has to be written in there.
And he didn't do it.
No, he didn't do it because he didn't realize it's necessary, as we're going to say in a second. So that, when do we say that something is Torah sofer if it's something that everybody knows should be in there? It's a normal thing. When you buy property, you buy by achrayus. So unless somebody is going to specifically say, I want to buy without achrayus, I want to save the extra money and not have to spend money on achrayus, then fine, you assume that achrayus is supposed to be there. Here, where the dayan himself thought that it's not necessary to write this v'ishtamay dayanah, and it's not so obvious, and the fact that it's left out, you have to assume, okay, he made a mistake in the din, fine, maybe he's chayav to reimburse or maybe not, it really depends whether he's a mumcha l'rabim, but you can't say that we can't say, like in legal terminology, that we deem as if it's there. Because the fact is that the dayan obviously didn't realize it had to be there. What's the difference? What was his mistake? Who suffer? Rabbi Bashila figured like this. Look, hani bahani didei. Ultimately, all the property is now in Rav Chiya's hands. It's 25 years since his husband, since his brother died. By now, he's had the property for 25 years. Mali mahani, mali mahani. So what's the difference whether the almana is able to collect from one set of property or from the other? So there's no reason to write this v'ishtamay dayanah. V'loihi, but what was Rabbi Bashila's mistake? That it's not so. Zimnin de Oslo mashpacho lehu. What could happen? Let's say, so this almana now goes and takes a piece of property that it turns out actually belonged to Rav Chiya all this time, not to her late husband. She goes and improves this property. Meanwhile, the property that actually originally belonged to her husband is deteriorating because she's not taking care of it. And now why would that be? The vote would be like this. She's taking property and she's improving it because she says, look, I want it from the Adrasta, I want it from the Akhrasta, etc. It's mine. I'm gonna improve it now, and that way I'll be able to sell it for a nice price. Meanwhile, what happens to the property that Rav Chiya actually yarshined from his brother? He may figure, you know what, sooner or later the whole thing is going to be settled and based, and it's going to turn out that she took property that originally belonged to me and that she shouldn't have. She should have taken property that belonged to my brother. I'm going to get back what she took. I'm going to have to give her the property that I currently have in my possession. I have no incentive to improve it.
Why you didn't tell that? Specifically when the property was taken.
He didn't have to. The point is, Rabbi Bashila thought there might not be a difference, but we're saying there could come out a case where there ends up being a difference, where she took one piece of property, meanwhile he's leaving the other one unimproved. Wait. Later on he tells her, you know what, obviously that was a mistake. You shouldn't have taken property that belonged to me to begin with. You should have taken property from my brother. But now that property from the brother is unimproved. It's deteriorated during this time. But Asila, Pukila, Albedina, and then people are going to speak negatively against the Beis Din. Why didn't the Beis Din think about this to begin with to make sure that the Almana has the best takana for her, that she should get good property that's in good shape? So because of that, it's a subtle detail, but because of that, even in a case where there's only one brother and he yarshined everything anyway, like this case over here, you still have to write this v'ishtamay dayanah in order to avoid this situation. And because Rabbi Bashila didn't write that, that was considered a mistake in halacha, and therefore that affects her rights to the parent.
Even if the property wasn't correct.
So that's because there's this possibility that the property she got may have not been the correct one to begin with. And that then later on, when it's traded, then she'll end up suffering a loss, and then people are going to say that Beis Din is careless with the rights of the almana. We can't do that.
Therefore, we
have to say that the adrafta was written wrongly. And Rabbi Bashila should know in the future, if such a case ever comes up again, that he should make sure to write v'ishtamay dayanah no matter what. That we recognize that this property, that we recognize which property belonged to the brother originally and which one belonged to the other brother, and we gave her the right to take from any properties that originally belonged to her husband.
But even if you wrote v'ishtamay dayanah, still one property is hers.
No, but that's the thing. Then she would know that she's only entitled to take from property that belongs to her husband, that belonged originally to her husband, and that her brother-in-law yarshined.
The fact that he didn't include it,
that's a mistake. Yeah. Hadron alachanoi. Last Eric. This shnei dayonik zeres hayub yishlayim. This parak is going to deal with a number of miscellaneous dinim having to do with the ksuba. there's going to be several machlokes in between the same tanoim, but most of them have to do with the dinim of ksubas. Shnei dayonik zeres harib Yerushalayim. There were two dayonik zeres in Yerushalayim. What dayonik zeres are, we'll talk about in the Gemara. Admon v'chanan ben Avishalom. Those were their names. Tosfos, by the way, points out apparently there were girsoit in the Gemara that Chanan's father's name was Avshalom. And Tosfos says, how you talking? You don't name after a rasha. Therefore, Tosfos says the correct Yerushalayim here should be Avishalom. In Israel nowadays, it's common enough to find people named Avshalom, though. Chanan Oimer. Oh, okay. There you go.
Mandate.
Yeah, there's one famous, a popular radio personality in Israel, Avshalom Kor, at the Tanakh contest earlier this year. He was the moderator of it. Chanan Oimer Shnei Dvarim, Admon Oimer Shiva. Chanan said two dinim, which the Chachamim disagreed with, and Admon said seven. And we're going to go through all nine of these dinim in our parak. Most of them have to do with the halachas of ksubas. Number one, Misha Halach Lemedina Siyam, a man went overseas, V'ishta Tevat Mezonis, and his wife comes to Beis Din demanding Mezonis. My husband didn't leave me anything. I need you to sell some of his property so I have what to eat. Chanan Oimer Tishava Basof, Le Tishava Batchila. So Chanan says that she doesn't have to swear at the beginning when she's coming to collect mezonos. We don't make her swear that, for example, that her husband didn't leave her a bag of money to live off of, but we do make her swear at the end when eventually time passes and he's still overseas and we find out that he's dead and she wants to collect her ksuba, then we're going to make her swear that she didn't take more, that she didn't get part of it paid while she was alive or take some of it on her own or whatever. Then the sons of the Kohenim Gdolim argued with Chanan. She has to swear at the beginning and at the end, when she first comes for the mezonos and at the end when she's collecting oksuba. Rav Yosef ben Hokinas kedivrei. Rav Yosef ben Hokinas says, I agree with the Bnei Kohenim Gdolim against Chanan. On the other hand, Rav Yechim ben Zaka, Yocha Omer Chanan. No, Chanan said right. Lo tishava ala b'saif. She should only have to swear at the end. What do you mean, what a difference does it make?
The beginning and the end.
Does she have to swear right then when she's coming to collect mezonos or not? It's a difference in halacha.
How do you know if the husband is alive or not alive?
No, eventually, if Adam come that he's dead and she wants to collect her ksuba, then according to that, everybody agrees she'll have to swear at that point that she hasn't collected
only
some of her ksuba already.
Only if you have proof.
Yeah, we're talking about it here. So that's what we talked about at the end of Yuvamus. We learned about various permutations of what kind of edus we need for her to be able to remarry versus what kind of edus we need for her to be able to collect her ksuba. There was actually a machlokas, the Shama Bitzilul, in that connection, whether in a case when she's allowed to remarry, does that automatically entitle her to collect her ksuba or not? So, we said in the Mishnah that there were two dayonik zeiros, Uramini, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Shlosha dayonik zeilos, so Yerushalayim. There were three dayonik zeilos in Yerushalayim, so notice the difference, two versus three, and zeilos versus zeirois. The names were Admon men Gadoi, so our Mishnah just called them Admon, the Braisa gives his father's name, V'chonon ha-Mitzri, V'chonon ben Avishalom. So, Kashi Tlas Atrein, Kashi Gzeiros HaGzeilos. So you have a double contradiction. Number one, was it three or two? And number two, are they in charge of Gzeilos or Gzeirois? Tosfos asked the obvious question, so why not say there were three Dayonik Gzeilos and two Dayonik Gzeirois? What's the problem? The reason is because since we have at least one of the people is the same, two of the people are the same, Admon is the same Admon from our Mishnah, and Chanan ben Avishalom is the same Chanan from our Mishnah, They were going to have two different jobs. We were wearing two different hats, Dayonik Zeilos and Dayonik Zeirois. There's enough people in Yerushalayim, enough important Talmid Chachamim in Yerushalayim, they could have given each one a separate job. Obviously, it means it's the same thing. Right? The vote is that why should we assume that Admon ben Gadoi wore two hats, that he was both one of the two Dayonik Zeirois and one of the three Dayonik Zeilos? Why not? I mean, there's not enough Talmid Chachamim in Yerushalayim that you can't have five different people to do these jobs, that you need to have each one of them do double duty. So, Bishleim Atlas Atrein Leikasha. Okay, so the three and two is not such a kasha. The Choshev Leikatani, the Leikoshev Leikatani. Because the ones who are Choshev we mention, and the ones who are not Choshev we don't mention. What do we mean by Choshev? Rashi, Tosfos rather, says two possibilities what that means. One is, Poshet, that if we look in our perek, we're going to have the two dinim that Chanan, that Chanan ben Avishalom argued with the other Chachamim, the seven dinim that Admon argued with the Chachamim. We don't find any dinim in our perek that Chanan Amitzri argued with the Chachamim. So therefore, he's not choshev as in the sense of important, but choshev as is listed. There's nothing from him listed in our perek, in the Mishnah. Therefore, the Mishnah just bothered mentioning shnei dayan exeris, even though there were really three. That's one explanation. Then Tosfos says another explanation that yes, we're talking about who is more important and less important. The Mishnah, the two most important out of the three are Admon and Chanan ben Avishalom. Chanan HaMitzvi was also one of them, but he was less important. So the Mishnah doesn't list him, the Braita does. Okay, El Xeris Axelus Kasha, but what do you do about the Xeris and Xelus? What were they in charge of? Amr of Nachmis, it means both. Show you guys in Xerois al Xelois. It means that they were in charge of making Xerois of what the appropriate knas should be for Xelois, for stealing and other kind and other, not necessarily stealing, but other kinds of nizakim. Kitatanya, as we learn, for example, in a Braisa in Bava Kamma, Kitmanatia, if an animal wanders into somebody else's field and damages, and then and Kitma literally means it chops down, Natia, a young tree. So how much do you have to pay? On the one hand, it's a young tree. It's not worth very much right now, but eventually it would have grown into a big, mature tree. Rabbi Yossi Omer, goes to Xeris should be a Shalim Omerim. So the ones in charge of Xeris in Yerushalayim, the two from our Mishnah, or the three from the Braisa, the Omerim, they said as follows. Natiya bas shnasa shtei kesef. If it was a plant within its first year, then you have to pay 2 silver coins. Bas shtei shanim arba kesef. If it's within the second year, you have to pay 4 silver coins. So that's an example of the kind of thing that they were in charge of defining amounts for these kinds of things.
Evaluation.
Yeah. Okay, then I have a contradiction. Yet another Braisa says, Shloisha Dayon Exeris Hayu Yerushalayim, Admon V'Chanon V'Nachum. So now we have all of a sudden another character, Nachum. Where does he come from? Amar Papa, Manton Nachum Rav Nathan. You know what? Which Tana is it that says, which would be the author of this Braisa, who says that Nachum was one of the Dayon Exeris in Yerushalayim, that would have to be Rav Nathan. The Tanya of Nathan Omer, after Nochum Amondi be goes to Xeris to Yerushalayim, that Nochum Amondi was also one of these goes to Xeris to Yerushalayim. The Chachamim disagreed with Reb Nathan on that. We're talking something that had been 100 or more years earlier. Reb Nathan lived towards the end of the Mishnah, so we're talking 100 or so years after the Churban. So it was a machlokes who had, in history, had Nochum been one of these Dayan Xeris or not.
Who is this Nochum Amondi?
So Nochum Amondi, he's a Tanya, he's mentioned a few places in the Mishnah. In Mehmet Lincoln, for example, he was from Modai, Bepashtus, yeah. Apparently, this was a very very cosmopolitan thing. You know, you had Choron HaMitzri, you had Nochum HaMadi, yeah. There was a time once, many years ago, at a Fabrengen, when the Rebbe apparently was trying to be Mevatel, something that's going on at the UN, so he asked for different chassidim to represent different countries in the world. They live in one, they were born in another, they do business in a third, so they had a whole mini United Nations there in 770. This is kind of like that, yeah. Right, because he went with Friedrich Rebbe to Egypt, yeah. Vitulek, the Gemara asks, what are you talking about? Those are the only Dayonim of Xeris in Yerushalayim. Va'amar of Pinchas Amar of Oshia, Shlosh Meyetz Vetishim Va'abba Bate Dinin Hayyub Yerushalayim. There were 394 Bate Dinin in Yerushalayim. And Nashi says these are Bate Dinim of 23 Dayonim each. Not everybody agrees with that, though. There are Mepharshim who say instead that it means Bate Dinim of 3. But still, Kenegdon Bate Knesias, then there were a corresponding number of Shuls, or Kenegdon Bate Medrashas. Corresponding to that, there was an equal number of Bate Medrash, or Kenegdon Bate Sofrim, and corresponding to that, there were Chadarim for the children to learn. So the point is, there were a lot of Dayanim over there. Actually, Marshad brings from a Rashi on Yeshaya that there were even more. It says that the pasuk over there says Milay Asi Mishpat. It's one of the psukim from Atzeret of Shabbos Chazoin. Milay Asi is Rashi of 481. So Rashi says over there it means that there were 481 Batidinim in Yerushalayim. Anyway, so what do you mean only three Dayan Xeris? The answer is Dayan in Tuva Habu. Sure, there were lots of Dayanim in Yerushalayim. But Chikamrin and Agoizu Xeris, Kamrin, but the specific ones who were in charge of Xeris, of setting up official benchmarks like that everybody else follows, that was only this one panel of these three Dayanim. Now on to how were they paid? Always an important topic. Amar of Yehuda, Amar of Asi, goes to Xeris, Shabir Shlaim, Hon Notin Schorim Tishim, Batesha Monim, Trumas Alishka. These goes to Xeris, these three Dayanim that we're talking about, used to collect their schar of 99 mana from the Trumas Alishka. The Trumas Halishka is the Shkolim that were brought to the Beis Hamikdash every year, that they'd use that money for the Korbanos and all the other Tzorchei Tzibur. Among the Tzorchei Tzibur is the Zayonim. Why is that considered Tzorchei Tzibur? There's a number of different explanations in Mefarshim. Among them is the idea, we know the famous thing that the Eibishter hates Korbanos that are brought out of Gezel, out of stolen money. So if these people are in charge of setting up the equitable things in din to make sure that everything is done fairly and nobody cheats somebody else, that's an important need for the Beis Hamikdash. Loi rotsu, then if they didn't want this amount, Maisifin lahem, then they would give them a raise, they'd give them more. What do you mean, Loi rotsu? They didn't want what? They didn't want to judge a din Torah unless they get a raise. Also, Barashi, Yaskin, and are we talking about Rishayim over here? As we're going to learn soon in the Gemara, you're not supposed to collect money for judging a din Torah. Ella, no. What we mean is Loi sofku. If it wasn't enough for them, so the 99 mana turns out not to be enough. Prices have gone up. Af pichalei rotsu, even though these dayanim are saying we don't want anymore because they're supposed to be soine besa. That they Rashi says over there in Parshas Yisro when it says soine besa, that means they're not even particular about their own money, let alone somebody that alach kam of a kama. They're careful about somebody else's money. So they may not want the raise. Nevertheless, meisif and aleim, we still give them the raise. Marshall explains, by the way, we don't mean 99 mana per person. That would be a huge amount. What we mean is, if the Marshall's assumption seems to be that each of these dayanim was in charge of a base din of 23. So therefore, you're talking about altogether 69 dayanim. Yeah, each of them was, yeah. So if you take the 99 mana, by the way, the Rambam's gear says a little different. His gear says 90 mana. But if you take it and split it among these 69 dayanim, you come out with about 140 or so per year. It's not a huge amount. It's not a tiny amount, but it's not a huge. They weren't becoming rich from this.
But if it's
yeah, it was enough to live on, yeah. But if it turned out that it wasn't enough, then yeah. Okay. Speaking of taking money...
How do you know if you have enough money to give
the
Shkolim?
What? So the Beis Din would have to... When the Shkolim were brought, then they'd have to know. They know how much is in there. They're keeping track of it. And they know how much is coming in and how much is going out. Somebody has to be keeping the books over there. And among the items on the books is they know they have to earmark every year 99 mana for these dayanim and their families.
Well,
yeah, we had. We're going to tomorrow. The next couple of days on Kukvav Kukzayin, we're going to have a little bit of a sugya about more of the details of what's done with the shkolim. What? Another case of a dayan being paid, Kauna, that was his name, Kauna, he was one of the early Amoraim, he was a chaver of Shmuel, have a shokil istira mizakeh ve'istira mechayev. He would take as payment an istira, which is the name of a coin, from the one who was innocent, and an istira from the one who was guilty, v'doin lohudina, and he would judge the din. Which means Rashi says he would tell them. Rashi says a little later it means that he would tell them what the din was. In other words, he would sit for a din Torah. He would hear out the two sides before he's going to tell them the psak din. Each of them has to give him an istira. Question is, hechi yavid hachi? How can you do that? Voksi v'sheichad leitikach. You're not allowed to take sheichad. V'chitei mahani mila hechad leishokem mitavayu. So you might argue, okay, the pasuk is talking about when you're taking equally from both people. Dilma asti lafluya dinner, because then you're going to pervert justice. You're going to favor the one who gave you the sheichad. Kauna kivin deshokem mitavayu loy asti lafluya dinner. Okay, so then you'd say kauna is not a problem. He's taking equally from both. How does that work? V'chilei asti lafluya dinner mishari. How are you allowed to take sheichad even if it's not going to be changing what the din should be? Vatanya, when the pasuk says, the Braisa says, when the pasuk says v'sheichad leitikach mat hamad loyma, what is the pasuk adding? In the lamed shalei lezakas is chayev shalei chayev lezakai. Is the pasuk just telling you flat out, don't take bribes to pervert justice, to declare the innocent guilty or the guilty innocent? You don't need that. Harekvan emolei tzata mishpat. You have another pasuk that says don't pervert justice. Even if you're going to be perfectly fair, you're going to take equally from both. The Torah said that you're going to declare the innocent innocent and the guilty guilty. Still, the Torah says that you're not allowed to take sheichad. So what is Tana doing, taking? The answer is, Hani mili hechad the shokah b'tardas sheichad. Yes, but that's if you're taking it as sheichad. Kana b'tardas agra hava shokah. Kana is taking it for shedas payment for work that he did. That's allowed. The question is that allowed? Or b'tardas agra mishari? V'atznan, we learn in a b'raisa, in a mission, in b'chorus, hanoitel schar lodun, if a person takes schar to judge a din Torah, din of talin. Then his judgments are considered batal. We're going to talk about soon. Schar batala. Wait. So how is he allowed? The answer is hanimi le'agar dinah. That's if you're being paid for the actual din Torah. there's an interesting thing, by the way, the Bar Tanura, you know, usually the Bar Tanura on the Mishnah is just very cut and dry, you know, just the facts, ma'am, kind of thing. On this Mishnah in Bechoris, he takes a second and gives a little rant over there against the Rabbonim that he saw in Ashkenaz in Germany, in the Ro'isi Sharura. I saw like a horrible thing over there, like there, when people come to them to be Masader Get, they demand 10 gold coins for it, and the Edom also demand payment for it. Ha'itocha, he says. And then Amar says that, okay, you can be melamed tzchus on them, that it's different once the dayan is already involved with the din Torah, like over here, if they're l'chatchila coming to him to be mesader the guest, he can always tell them, I can't be bothered, go to another Rav. So if they're going to want his time, then they have to pay, that Amar says. No, in other words, according to the Ramah, once he's already involved, if he has to be involved because there's nobody else, then he wouldn't be entitled. But if he could l'chatchila tell them, I don't want to be Masadu this get, go to somebody else, then the fact that they're taking his time to do it, he would be allowed to. The Bar Tanura obviously disagrees. Anyway.
Right. I see.
So this that you're mentioning, by the way, about taking from the tzibur, this is why the Dayonic Zeris, there was no problem. We said they were paid from the Trumas Alishka. That's no problem. They're being paid by the tzibur. Here, Kauner is being paid directly by the Baal HaDin. That's what the Gemara is having trouble with. So anyway, let's continue. Wait a few lines. So the question is, the answer is Hanimila Aga Dina. That's when he's taking payment for the Din Torah itself. Karna Aga Batela Havashoko, whereas Karna was being paid for the time that he could have been working. The question is, Aga Batela Mishori, is that Bechlal allowed? Valtani, we learn in a Braisa, Mechur Hadayan Shanoitel Schalodron, a Dayan who takes money in order to judge, is repulsive. Elishadina Din, but the evidence is Din Torah as a Din Torah. Now we have to consider, hey, Kedami, what was he being paid? Ilema aga dina, if you're saying that he's being paid for the actual din Torah, what do you mean dina din? V'hatanya anotel schalod and dina ptelim. We just said, the Mishnah in Mechoros, that if a person takes schar to judge a din Torah, his din is bottle, meaning even b'diabet. Ela aga ptela. Obviously, the Brice has to be talking about where he's getting is just payment for batala, for the time that he spent on the din Torah that he could have been earning a living. V'katani mechor adayin. And still the Brice is saying that a dayin who does that is disgusting. So what is Karna doing? The answer is Hanimila Batela de la Mukha. The difference is the Braisa is talking about a batola that's not so obvious. It's not so blatantly obvious that this Dayan right now, when he's sitting to do this Din Torah, could have been doing something else for a living. Karna Batela de Mukha, however, whereas in Karna's case, it was a batola that was very obvious. Have a shocker that he was taking. That's allowed. Why? What would Karner be doing otherwise? To have a tohi ba'amra de chamra, Karner used to have a job. He would sniff in a wine cellar. He had a very sensitive nose. He would be able to sniff out in a wine cellar what barrels are going to last a while and which ones are going to turn sour sooner rather than later. And therefore, he'd be able to advise the owner, these you should sell sooner, these you can hold on to for a while. So he would do that, the Ave Lezuza, and then pay him a zuz each time he did that. So therefore this is a constant thing that he can always be doing. So when he takes off time to judge a din Torah, it's blatantly obvious that he's losing money, that he's losing time, and then time is money. Mashenkin, in a regular case, a dayan who regularly sits to do din Torah, not necessarily can he collect on Skar Batala. He should be paid from the tzibur like he was saying before.
That's what I said. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there's nothing other than dinim mamonos nowadays. You don't have dinim fashas nowadays. You take from the tzibur, yeah. You take a regular salary from the tzibur, yeah. I guess, yeah. I don't know. I'm not a rov. I don't pass in halacha. I don't know. Okay. Ki hod Rav Huna, like we find in the case of Rav Huna, ki have also din lekame, when a din Torah would come to him, amalahu, he would tell them, havu li gavra the doli li b'charikoi, you have to find me somebody who will water my field in my absence. You want to take me away from my day job to do a din Torah, then you have to find somebody to take my place. V'edron l'chol dina, and then I'll judge the din Torah for you. So we see that when it's a schar batala, when it's blatantly obvious that he's losing time from his regular day job, then he's allowed. Speaking of Sheikhad, now we're going to get into a little agata on the subject. Amar Rav Abo, boyu re'e kama smuye seinein shem kabla Sheikhad. Look how blind people who take Sheikhad are. Think of it. Adam chash be'enav, when a person feels even a little pain in his eyes, nois and mamal roifa, he gives money to the doctor, sopik misrapa, sopik any misrapa. And after all that, it's doubtful whether the doctor is going to be able to cure him or not. Behein notes and shava pruta, where somebody who takes Sheikhad is taking just a pruta, or misamin enayim and blinding his own eyes. Shnema, as the pasuk says, "Kiyash Sheichad Yahav Pichtim." Sheichad blinds the wise. Tana Rabbanan, when the pasuk says, "Kiyash Sheichad Yahav Einich Chachamim," it means Havachomer LeTipshim. It means how much more so if it blinds the wise, and how much more so it blinds the foolish. And when it
says, "How much money is getting to the doctor?"
That's not the point. Come on, no, whatever. That's not the point. The point is that a person is willing to risk the blindness from Sheichad for even a small amount. So, how much more so if the recipient is a tippish? And when it says that it perverts the words of the righteous, and then how much more so that if he's a Rasha? Foolish people or Rashaim, what are they doing judging a Din Torah in the first place? Who's giving them Sheikhad? No, what the Braitha means is as follows. Means even if he's a great chacham, but he takes sheichad, before he dies, he'll have a stopping up of the heart. So in other words, when it says it means he starts out as a chacham, but he takes sheichad and keeps on taking it and becomes more, and then eventually he's going to become a tippish. So he starts out as a chacham, but he's going to become a tippish. That's the Kavachomel Tipshin. The Salaf Divir Tzadikim, and when it says it perverts the words of the Tzadikim, similarly, it means Afilu Tzadik Gomer, like Keach Sheikhad, even if it's a complete Tzadik, but then he takes Sheikhad, and a Niftim and Oilam, but it's Tzir of Daf, he won't leave the world without getting confused, without getting mentally confused. So same idea. From a Tzadik, he becomes a Rasha, and from a Keach, he becomes a Tipish. Tosfos brings another explanation that when we said before that Kiyash Sheikhad Yaveh Nechachamim Kavachoyim L'Rushoyim and Kavachoyim L'Tikshim, that's not part of the words of the Braith. So the Braith itself was just saying Kiyash Sheikhad Yaveh Nechachamim V'Yisalef Divri Tzadikim. The Gemara assumes that that meant, if it means the Chachamim, how much more so the Rishayim, and if it's the Tipshim, and if it means the Tzadikim, how much more so the Rishayim. And then the Gemara is saying it can't mean that, because they're not doing Dinei Torah in the first place. And so the Gemara explains that, no, what it means is that the Braita itself is just saying, forget about Tipshim, and forget about Tipshim and Rishayim, it means that the Chacham or the Tzadik himself is going to go, is going to deteriorate.
Ad
Kedei Kach, yeah. So the question is, if he's a Tzadik Gomer, what's he doing taking Sheikhad in the first place? So they tell a story involving the Abdur Rav, one of the Talmudim of Baruch Mezhvuzer, that one time he was sitting in a Din Torah with a couple of other Dayanim. The Bale Din had managed to get in to the other Dayanim and give them Sheikhad, so they were all leaning towards one side. The Abdur Rav, there was known to be incorruptible, they couldn't get to him, so therefore he's still, as they're discussing the thing, the other Dayanim are on one side and he's on the other. Well, the Baal Din is trying to think, well, what am I going to do in order to get him to agree also? So somebody gives him an eight, say, you know what, go sneak some money into his kapata that he wears only on Rosh Chodesh. It's going to be, it's a few days until Rosh Chodesh. It's going to be time until he b'chlal finds it. By that time, the Din Torah will be over. And yes. So he comes. So the after Rav comes back to continue the Din Torah, and all of a sudden he feels like his mind is starting to incline in the other direction. Like we're going to learn some stories in the Gemara tomorrow about Amaroyim, about Tanoyim that happened to. They were about to receive. Yeah, like it's sort of like he has subconsciously he starts tending towards this other guy. What's going on all of a sudden? He thinks to himself, you know, and then all this time I've known the Din is this way, and all of a sudden something's the matter over here. I have to hold up the Din Torah for a couple of days. Things have come up. I have to research things. Comes Rosh Chodesh, he puts on his kapote, puts his hand in the pocket, and all of a sudden there's all this money. starts asking around. Akitsu, he finds out what happened. He makes the guy confess, and he rules against him. So he realized now this is what it means. Even a tzaddik gomer, he received shochad without even knowing about it, and it still affected his judgment. Yeah. By the way, on this topic of shochad, there's an interesting, kind of funny but kind of sad shuvah from the Chavos Yoyer. He describes a conversation that his brother-in-law had. He describes a conversation that his brother-in-law had, that his brother-in-law, or the Rav in Germany, had with the local duke, the local count. The Chavos Yoyer, a famous Rav 300-400 years ago. His brother was a Rav, he himself was a Rav in several places, in Worms and in several other kalas. His brother was also a Rav, his brother-in-law, rather, was also a Rav. His brother-in-law was also a Rav in a city in Germany, and one he describes a conversation that his brother-in-law once had with the local duke, or count, whatever his title was. The count asks him, "How you talking that when Jews come to a case in front of a goyish judge, they give him sheichad. Your Torah says you're not allowed to pervert justice." And the brother-in-law says, "I have a couple of different explanations for it. One of them, he says, kind of a very ironic thing. He says, look." When you have it's a Jew and a goy in front of a goyish dayan, automatically you have a good reason to assume that goyish dayan favors the goyish litigant. So the Jew pasha has to give sheichad in order to equalize things, and the duke accepts that, you know, okay, it's an acceptable excuse, but still, you know, it's still not so kosher v'yasher. So the Chavos Yoyer actually has a tshuva, you know, is it taker that are you taker allowed to give sheichad to a goyish judge? On the one hand, I mean, you know, goy is on the one hand fine, he's a goy, he doesn't have a mitzvah sheichad necessarily, but on the other hand, I mean, lifnei lo sitin michshel, a goy does have a mitzvah of dinim to judge fairly. And so Itaka says, similar to what his brother-in-law said, that yes, if you have a situation where you know absolutely for sure the judgment really is supposed to be in your favor, but plus, you know, you don't have evidence that the court will accept, or you know that they're favoring the other guy, then fine, maybe you have an excuse to give sheichad to equalize things. But if you're giving sheichad in a situation where you know the judge would be judging fairly and you're giving sheichad for him to go to your side, absolutely also, he says. In the Gemara, he also Rav Dimi Omer. When Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, he said, "Dorash Rav Nachman Bakoyin, my dichtiv." What does it mean? It says in the pasuk, "Melech Pamishpat Yamid Oret." A king upholds the world with justice. The ish trumos yaharzina, and a person of trumos destroys it. What's the comparison? What's the contrast between a king and a person of trumos? Means im doymed dayin lamelech she'en etzarech l'klum. If the dayin is like a king, that he doesn't need anybody else. He doesn't need favors from anybody. He's rich. Rashi says he doesn't need favors from anybody else. And Mepharshim also adds based on a Gemara and Sanhedrin that it also includes that he doesn't need to ask anybody else what the halacha is. Then Yamid Oretz, then he upholds the world. Then he's like a melech. This is like a koyin who goes around from one granary to another asking for truma or getting truma. Then so he's like a dayan who goes and people need to do him favors and he accepts them. Yahar Sena, then he destroys the world because that's a form of sheikhan. That's what we're saying. An Osher, somebody who's going to be independent.
Someone who had a rich childhood, too.
Not necessarily rich. No, I mean, no. Wait. No, because we're not talking about things that happened 50 years ago, maybe. I mean, you know. No, he's not the kohen is doing favors. The other people are doing favors for him. So if the dayan is like that he's going around and people are always doing favors for him, that's not a good thing. And in that connection, Amar Rav Bar Rav Shila, Hai Dayana, the Shoyl Sheilter, if a Dayan borrows things from people on a regular basis, he borrows things from his neighbors, Pasal Amei Dandina, that he's Pasal to judge a Din Terda because he's going to favor them. V'loy Amar An Elder Lef Loyla Ushuli, but this is only if the Dayan himself doesn't have things of his own to lend out. Abel Isle Lo Ushuli, less one Bar, but if he himself also lends out things and it's just regular neighborliness, then it's not a problem. Is that so? We find that Rava used to borrow things from the family of Bar Marion, even though he didn't lend things to them. That was different. He didn't really need to borrow the things. He borrowed it for things from them in order that people should consider them important. Look how important they are. Even Rava is borrowing from them. But not that he needs the favor from them and therefore is going to end up favoring them. Amar Rava, my time is the Shukta. What's the underlying reason why Shaychad is Asr? And the Ion Yaakov on Ein Yaakov says, what do you mean? Why Shaychad is Asr? The Torah says it's Asr. It's Asr. Finished. He says what it means is, given that we said before that even if you take both sides equally, given that we're going to say later, which we'll learn tomorrow, about little minor things that somebody does a favor for a Dayan and he passes him for a Din Torah, why do we go that far? Yeah. The reason is, given the Kabbalah Sheikh Damine, once a person has received Sheikhad from somebody, so their minds become closer to Lagabe, his mind becomes closer to him, therefore they become like one person, and we know a person can't see their own fault. So therefore it's like now this person is part of the Dayan, and then Dayan won't be able to see his fault. And in fact, my Sheikhad, what does it mean? What does the word Sheikhad mean? Shehu Chad. It means that he is one. The one who gives the sheikhad and the one who receives it become like one person, and therefore the person who gave is now like a part of the dayan. Not worse, but whatever. It's like now they're one person. This is also, by the way, the Chavis Yoy mentions this in his argument also, that this shehuchad, you can argue when the dayan and the Baal Din are both Jews. When you have in the situation that he was describing, when you're going to a goyish court and one of the litigants is a goy, then abed abed, yeah.
Yeah.